I Harihi Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadidhamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, so now so concerned that someone may speak in this way, then okay, here someone may say, since this individual spirit souls are a specific potency of the Lord, they are in all respects one with Him. They are not in any way different from Him. Right, so then Bhaktivinoda Thakur is then given this verse, Sutra 13. Although they are spiritual and blissful, the individual souls are different from the Supreme. For it is not inevitable that they are always situated in the spiritual reality. Right? Being tatasta means they can, even though they're coming from the Lord, the nature is that they can be situated outside of spiritual consciousness. Right? So that's what makes them unique. Like that. So then Srila Prabhupada mentions on this from the purport to Mantra 7, page 26. In this mantra, the words ekatvam anupashyata indicate that one should see the unity of all living entities from the viewpoint of the revealed scriptures. The individual sparks of the supreme whole, the Lord, possess almost 80% of the known qualities of the whole. But they are not quantitatively equal to the Supreme Lord. These qualities are present in minute quantity, for the living entity is but a mere minute part and parcel of the Supreme Whole. To use another example, the quantity of salt present in a drop is never comparable to the quantity of salt present in the complete ocean. But the salt present in the drop is qualitatively equal in chemical composition to all the salt present in the ocean. If the individual living being were equal to the Supreme Lord, both qualitatively and quantitatively, there would be no question of his being under the influence of the material energy. In the previous mantras, it has already been discussed that no living being, not even the powerful demigods, can surpass the Supreme Being in any respect. Therefore, ekatvam does not mean that a living being is equal in all respects to the Supreme Lord. It does, however, indicate that in a broader sense there is one interest, just as in a family the interest of all the members is one, or in a nation the national interest is one, although there are many different individual citizens. Since the living entities are all members of the same supreme family, their interest and that of the supreme being are non-different. Every living being is the son of the supreme being. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 7.5, all living creatures throughout the universe, including birds, reptiles, ants, aquatics, trees, and so on, are emanations of the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, all of them belong to the family of the Supreme Being. There is no clash of interest. Right. So here he's pointing out where that oneness is, but then that there's a difference, because it's very important to be able to understand both. So he's established the oneness, but then someone will say, oh, so that means they're not different. Because in the beginning, someone will say they're different, then you have to show the oneness. Right? So both have to be established. Because you've established one, doesn't mean that the other one has been understood, because they're contradictory. So the tendency will be is that whichever one you establish first, then they'll say the other one is the problem. Right? Because if you say they're one, oh, then they're non-different. You know, if you say they're non-different, then you say, well, there's no commonality, right? So you have to, but having done both, then you have to point out they simultaneously exist both at the same time, right? Otherwise, you have dwait and advait.
So that means you look at it from the point of Dwait, you can look at it from the point of Advait, but they're two separate viewpoints. But what we're establishing is that you can look at both these viewpoints at the same time, and they're not contradictory. Right? So the simultaneity of oneness and difference. So the drop of water from the ocean has the same chemical compound as the whole ocean itself. But in quantity, it is very, very minute. So the jiva is the same. He has the same qualities as the Lord, 80% up to 80% is 78%. So, but it's in very minute amounts. So the qualities being the same, that means there's commonality. So there's basis for relationship. Because those other points that are there then are things that are not necessary for the jiva. The jiva doesn't need to be omniscient or, you know, the creator of all the worlds or, you know, things like that. Those aren't important for him, right? And for him to be the center of all attention, always surrounded by all loving, that's not important either, because he's one of those loving devotees. So the qualities that the jiva doesn't have are not important for his relationship with the Lord. So it's just everything works very naturally. Does that make sense? So the Upanishad is establishing this point then. So then from that, yeah. So then we're establishing that the Upanishad is saying there's two birds in the tree. One is thinking that he belongs to the material energy. One knows he's not. When the one that thinks he is turns to the one that is not, then he also, like him, has that same quality. Right? But having that happen, still there are two different persons. Does that make sense? So one gets out of the material world by seeing everything in connection to the Lord. He sees the non-difference in all living entities. He sees how they are all Brahman, like the Lord. But at the same time, it's his individuals who are, you know, non-different from the Lord. Does that make sense? Like that. So he gives the example of the oneness being like that of a family or a nation or community. You know, is that you can say, yes, they're all from this community, like that, but at the same time, they're individuals in this community. Does that make sense? Yes.
In the preparatory mantra 6, Srila Prabhupada writes that both Madhyamadhikari and Udhyamadhikari, they're able to perceive the spiritual nature of the soul.
Yes.
They're able to see it as a part and parcel of Krishna. At the same time, what is the principal difference between the vision of Madhyamadhikari and Uttamadhikari? Because both of them are also able to perceive the difference in conditioning of different part and parcels which are here in this material world. So what is the principal difference between the vision of Madhyam and Uttama?
What will be the difference based on that they can both see the nature of the soul in connection with the Lord? Like that? See, the Madhyama, he will distinguish between the Lord, you know, the devotees, the innocent, and those who are not very interested. The Uttama doesn't. He sees everyone as servants of the Lord, and they're all servants, and he doesn't really consider himself much of a servant. Therefore, the Uttama has a tendency not to preach. He's nice, he interacts very well, but he doesn't preach. Because you don't need to preach to, you know, someone who's more advanced than you. You know what I'm saying? Well, the Madhyama will make that distinction. So even though he can see the souls and he can understand everybody on the transcendental platform, he still make the distinction. Means, in other words, those who are devotees, he'll interact in one way. Those who are not devotees but who are innocent and open, then he'll act in a different way. And those who are not interested, then he'll basically avoid. Like that. And then, besides, then he worships the Supreme Lord. Does that make sense?
Yes, but Uttama seeing...
No, but he sees... It's like this. There's some elements of the brown in both of them, so therefore then they're both the same, right? So what's the difference?
One is small, one is big.
Okay, but there is a difference, right? So therefore, appreciate the difference where it's seen. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, you've used the thing as, okay, of Uttamadhikari means he sees all living entities as part and parcels of the Lord. Therefore, if the Madhyama sees like that, what's the difference? But it's a matter of they can see that, but how they see it. So the Madhyama sees like that and, you know, categorizes them. The Uttama sees them like that, doesn't categorize. You know, in that way. He may be able to tell the difference between pillar Brahman and person Brahman. You know what I'm saying? And so therefore he can interact with them. But his point is he does not distinguish between who's a devotee and who's not, while the Madhyama does. Right? Therefore the Madhyama preaches. So if there wasn't a commonality there, how would the Uttama come to the Madhyama platform? Does that make sense? So there has to be something in common, otherwise how do they match? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Commonality is obvious. The difference is, for me, it's a little bit difficult to understand.
But that means the difficulty meaning if the commonality is that they're seeing, they can both see the living entities as Brahman. That's the common point. But how within Brahman they make distinction or not, that's where the difference is. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, let us say, okay, two people go into the kitchen, one who knows cooking, one who doesn't. Both can tell the difference between a cauliflower and a potato. But one will just say it's a cauliflower and this is a potato. The other one will think, well, hey, I can cook this into this and that I can make into that. You know what I'm saying? So if you're just taking that they can both see a cauliflower and a potato, then you won't be able to see the difference. It's what they can do with it. But if that commonality is not there, how will the Uttamas act as Madhyamas? But that's the point, is so therefore the Uttamas acting as Madhyamas are more effective Madhyamas because they have Uttama vision. But their perceiving it means they're utilizing it like a Madhyama. Well, a neophyte, he also takes up the duties as a Madhyama, but he doesn't have that realization. Therefore, he'll tend to, okay, here's devotees and non-devotees and this and that. If there's any discrepancy, he immediately will make such a divide of, you know, us and them. Like that. So he's not able to, his preaching is not as broad. So in other words, those persons that he can relate to their qualities, he'll be able to categorize as innocent. You know what I'm saying? It might be difficult for him to categorize someone who is not in the same kind of either social status or moral status, you know, or economic status as him, as someone who's, you know, fit for receiving Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? The tendency will stick to, might Prabhupada, you know, if they were, you know, heads of state or, you know, just, you know, scraped off the pavement, he could talk to both of them. But the tendency is those that have been scraped off the pavement go out and preach to others, you know, that are on the pavement and tell them it's a nice thing to be scraped off. You know, you scrape off and then, you know, hey, we can go to the Sunday feast. You know, you don't see them talking to other people. You know what I'm saying? You know, someone's a nerd is not talking to artists. Artists aren't talking to nerds. You know, the more respectable aren't talking to real rough and ready. The rough and ready aren't talking like that. So the devotee will find. So that's not a problem. Point is as long as you're preaching, then that's the point. So by doing that, you get purified. You come to that platform. You can appreciate and you broaden your scope. And you continue that. You come to the Uttama platform. So it's not going to be a problem. It just means that your scope is limited, right? Because the neophyte will be seeing very much the conditioned nature, though he's trying to categorize it according to, you know, Lord, beyond that, devotees, you know, then non-devotees, and then real, you know, what he would consider, you know, pond scum or something, you know, like that. But depending on who they are, their narrowness of who's you know, fit and who is, you know, scumbags, maybe, you know, two people out of, you know, a million are, you know, how you say, qualified and everybody else is a write-off, right? You know, so as you go, the Madhyama, it will broaden because he's able to deal with a broader range because he's dealing with his own conditioned nature but not for results, right? So he'll engage. So naturally, if he's better at preaching in a certain group or not, he will stick to that because the idea is the results for Krishna. So you want to get the best result for Krishna. So if you could preach to, you know, how you say, two people and not get a good result, but if you could preach to 100 people and get a good result, since the results for Krishna, which would you do? Right? You take the 100. If the 100 are there, all there is the two, you take the two because it's for Krishna. You understand? Like that. So you make the distinction. The Uttama, because he sees everybody connected to Krishna, you know, factually, it's realized, it's not an understanding like that. Then, and he's therefore able to deal nicely with everybody. Everybody will be comfortable with him. So whatever are the anomalies of the conditioned nature won't get in the way of their interaction. You know what I'm saying? Means for the Uttama, then because he sees, he, you know, is able to appreciate everybody's position. He doesn't see you know, senior and junior in this way. He sees everybody as respectable. Therefore, he will deal with everybody in a way that everybody will respond very nicely. We don't hear of, you know, anybody not having a nice interaction with Srila Prabhupada. Doesn't matter, and he would speak to everybody. Even people who are inimical, he'd start talking, and within a few moments, then they're... You ever see the Prabhupada speaks out? You know, they always pull out in the BTG. You know, first one is, you know, Prabhupada will say something, and then the other guy, yeah, but this, that, you know, and then Prabhupada sees something else, no, but, you know, like this, and then Prabhupada says something else, and then the rest of it's just Prabhupada talking. Right? Why is that? You know? So it decelerated. Right? Then, you know, we do it, you know, Excel, you know, we say this, and then they go, what do you mean? And then we say, what do you mean that? And then, you know, and then that's kind of like, you know, and then there's just a few other things that they have to use, you know, how you say, you know, spirals and crosses and this and that, and then it was, you know, exclamation marks, and that was the end of the conversation. You understand? So, because Prabhupada can relate to everybody, there's no ego, there's nothing there to be disturbed. The person is like that, he's like that. You know, what do you want? You know, you go out and pet a dog, they bark, they slobber. You know, it's like that. It's not like, you know, ooh, he offended me, he slobbered on me. You know, it's like that. If you don't go, then don't go near dogs, right? You know what I'm saying? But don't expect, well, the dog should behave like that. I'm just, you know, like that, so. Does that make sense? So the point is the higher up it goes, the more subtle are the things, you know? That's all, like that. Yes.
He is saying that the living entity has the lowest qualities in a very minute quantity, but then we know that, like, Vaishnavas are described as oceans of compassion or good qualities. So is that the constitutional quantity, or is it something that they're empowered with when they're in connection with Krishna?
Ah, okay. You understand the question? Yeah. So that would be because they're in association with other devotees and they're in association with the Lord's internal potency, therefore they're empowered with those things. Like that. Does that make sense? So that's why it's said that, like, let's say you have a spiritual master, right? So some of them are like a small creek, you know, and some may be like a big rushing river. But the point is the quality of the water is the same. So who can take advantage of that creek, or where that creek can go, how much, then they're given the same benefit as those by a very large river. Just the river can deal with a much greater amount. You know what I'm saying? More people can get benefit from the river. You understand? That's why within the actual Vaishnav culture, there's no distinction made. You know what I'm saying? It's not that my guru is better than your guru. Like that kind of stuff, that's very neophyte. That's for the neophytes. The point is that your guru is right for you. Like that. By your nature, that's where you belong. Therefore, it's there. Then amongst devotees, you may say this one's more advanced, that one's less. That's another consideration. But it's not because he's your guru or he's a guru, therefore. You know what I'm saying? That's not the consideration. You know, it's like you have a basket of apples. You know, you don't say, you know, you can't, it means you can say, okay, apples are maybe better than another fruit. But the point is they're all apples. You can't say they're not apples. Only in this basket, only this apple's an apple. All the other apples are not apples. That would be wrong to say, right? So the point is, but within that you could say, okay, this one is, you know, this one has, you know, it's, the size is that, or it's sweeter, or something like this. That you can make a distinction. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? But otherwise one doesn't. You know, like the mouth, the eyes up there open, it also helps, you know, the whole process. You know what I'm saying? Guru, you know, guru means heavy. So there's so much knowledge in the head, it gets very heavy. And so sometimes it needs support, you know, you have to use one hand or two hands. Like that, you can also try it when you do it, you use the eyelids, you know, keep the eyelids open. At least people think you're awake, even though you're asleep. Just keep your elbows out of your ears. Is that okay? Yes. So the constitutional, that's general, that's generic according to whatever their nature is. Means that all the qualities are there, it's just a matter of what is the particular mix of them that makes them a unique individual, because each soul is unique. They're different from every other soul. But at the same time, is still they are in contact with the internal potency. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. So the principle is iron and fire. So the soul, as the iron, is in the fire of the internal potency, you know, of devotional service. Therefore, they may be able to carry so much. You know, like that. Like you have one soul, he's just in one place, he's preaching. But someone like Arjuna, then, you know, he's with the Lord in his pastime. So as one moment here is finished, it moves to the next universe. Right, into the next universe, you know, so that means in every second the pastime is in 11 universes, right? You know what I'm saying? It's moving through because it's each moment is going. So that means, you know, and then you have that with, you know, however much time there is in a day and for however long Krishna stays. So Krishna stays for, you know, how long he stays, 125 years. So you take 125 years and break that down into how many 1/11th of a second there is. So that many forms of Krishna are being manifest to the universe. That's that many forms of Arjuna. You understand? So this is empowerment. Because technically speaking, there's no difference in the quantity of Arjuna as the spirit soul and as another person. Like that. But he's empowered by the internal potency to perform these pastimes with the Lord. Therefore, he manifests more. But it's by the Lord's desire, for the Lord's pleasure. The whole point is that if it's pleasing to the Lord, it doesn't matter how much or little it is. Like Kolabhecha Sridhar is not, you know, seen as a great, you know, prominent devotee, but he was very pleasing to Lord Chaitanya. That the Lord would come and, you know, haggle with him over the price of his, you know, mochas, you know, the banana flowers, sometimes even just steal them. You know, Kolabhecha is making the point is, hey, I'm poor. You steal that, I don't got anything. I starve. You know, you pay for that. You know, like this. They just go back and forth. So basically after a time, the Kolabhecha would just already put aside, okay, this much is for Lord Chaitanya, this much I sell. That way then it was already, how you say, the spiritual gain was already factored into the material loss. Does that make sense? So, like that. He'd come drink from his water pot. You know, everybody else had a nicer water pot. His was made of iron, you know, since he was like that. So Lord Chaitanya would come, and I guess Lord Chaitanya is very tall, right? He's 7 foot tall, so Kolabhecha Sridhar would be much shorter. So then he'd come and pick up the water pot. You know how you drink, you don't touch it to your mouth. So Kolabhecha is trying to catch the pot, but he's Lord Chaitanya hold him and then hold the water pot up and drink, you know? That way he can't get at it, you know? So, like that. So, but these things are very intimate, and that so you can't say that these are any less special than other devotees, you know, Rupa and Sanatana, but just they, because of the nature of what they're doing, then they're dear for that aspect, and they're empowered and do very great work. Does that make sense? So, what everybody says. Something else? No?
Okay. Okay, so now, in the next sutra, the author describes the idea that the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual spirit souls are both one and different simultaneously, right? So now this has to be established. Because, yeah, remember, we're dealing with the nature of the jiva. So that aspect is that the Lord is there and that he's non-different from his creation. But that's generic. Now we're dealing with souls. It's a part of the creation. So we have to establish them and their non-difference, right? So Achintabheda Veda Tattva. So we see is that the Achintabheda Veda Tattva will have influence on all the three aspects of the Sambandhigyan, right? And the Shastra. Right? Because in Sambandhi you'll have the authority of the Shastra, the nature of Godhead, nature of the soul, nature of the material world, and their relationship. So their relationship is Achintabheda Veda Tattva. Right? So that is that, how you say, the eighth point. Then that is what holds it all together. Right? So you'll see it coming up. So in relation to the Lord, he's non-different as creation. But that's where Achintabheda Veda Tattva. Then here the jiva is not simultaneously one and different. Right? Sutra 14. Some say that the individual souls are the supreme. Others say the individual souls are different from the supreme. Still others say the individual souls are both one and different from the supreme. Right? Because that brings out, because if you bring out they are the same, or they say they are the supreme, then you lose rasa. Because if everybody's one, that aspect, then where's the interaction? Right? And, you know, it's not actually going to happen anyway. Like that. The soul being energy is dependent on the Lord, so it's not going to happen. Then if you say they're different, then the emphasis is on the tattva, is on their position. Then you have a problem of also rasa, is that how do you, what will be the basis for relationship? Because relationship means there's something in common. Right? Does that make sense? So that commonality, that's what's actually going to make the relationship work. So there must be a difference to have a relationship, but there must be something common so you can have a relationship. Does that make sense? So you need both. Right? Because now in that relationship, what's going to be engaged? Right? How are you going to interact with another living entity? Right? What is the method? You're going to use telepathy? Ouija board? Body, mind, words. So the senses will be engaged. Right? So that means if the senses are engaged, then that they are connected with the intelligence. Intelligence has to be functioning. So intelligence tells the difference and what's the commonality, right? Then the mind, it accepts and rejects. So it's going to accept some quality, reject something else, right? So it still is going to have that aspect of the duality. So you have to be able to see all this together. That will be rasa. You just accept one thing, reject another, that's another. But when they're combined, when they're used together, then there's some meaning. Does that make sense? Like that? So the whole idea is you have to have both. Then you get the element of rasa. Does that make sense? Like you see Ramanuja, then there's much more discussion of the interaction of the devotee and the Lord. Like that, because he's emphasizing more towards the oneness. Right? Vishuddha Dvait. But Madhva, it's just establishing, destroying the Mayavad philosophy. Because he's emphasizing the two. Right? He doesn't talk much about rasa. Not that he can't, but he's just not, because you emphasize two, rasa is not really a main element. Right? Does that make sense? So when you have both, then there's a difference and there's a commonality. So automatically there's a relationship. If they're one, there's no relationship. If there's two, where's the relationship? But if they're one and two, automatically there's a relationship, because there's two individuals that have something in common. Relationship. Now it's just a matter of whether you take advantage of it or not. Right? You have two people, same family. Relationship is inherent. Now it's a matter of whether they do something with it. Right?
So you have the jivas and the Lord. They're different. Same time, they're common. They have the same common qualities. That means inherent relationship is there. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? So that's why this philosophy is very important. Right? Because it's emphasizing, one, it gives the highest truth. The same time, it can deal with the highest rasa. The other ones will be limited in how much they can do. I mean, limited within unlimited. You know what I'm saying? Because they'll be specific just to Vaikuntha, or just to Ayodhya, or Dwarka. But if you deal with Braj, you can deal with all of them. That makes sense? You can deal with Dwarka, you can deal with Ayodhya and Vaikuntha. Right? But it's not necessarily that Braj, that entrance is there. Yes?
In other words, this philosophy facilitates Krishna Prema.
It facilitates Krishna Prema. Any Vaishnava philosophy does that. Because Prema is the second stage. We're talking about 10 stages. And the end, the 10th, is Mahabhava. So that's something that's being offered, you know, in this mood that hasn't been seen. Right? It's just like this. If you're dealing with Ashray and Vishay, okay? Right? It means Vishay meaning the Lord and Ashray meaning the devotee. So depending upon the mood of the devotee, you see that aspect or mood of Krishna. Right? Mother Jashoda is the ashray of parental rasa. Therefore, when she comes in front of Krishna, she draws from Krishna the mood of parental rasa. Right? So he acts like her son. The cowherd boys come in front of him, he acts like their friend. Right? The gopis come, he acts like their lover. Right? So that's ashray vishay. Now, then there's also going to be how much, means because Krishna is the unlimited energetic, but then how much, so he manifests his energy. So that depending upon how much you are of that energy, that much also in intensity or fullness, you can draw from Krishna. You understand? So Mother Yashoda being a bigger chunk of the energy, she can draw more parental rasa from Krishna than, let's say, one of her assistants, which is actually basically her expansion. So they'll only have a portion of her parental love for Krishna. So when they come in front of Krishna, they can only draw a portion of that. But it's common, so therefore they can all be together. You know what I'm saying? Because Mother Jashoda is there, the environment is there, then all the other elder gopis come, and then they, you know, sit with Krishna and talk and play and, you know, take care of him and feed him and dress him, and you know, they all have a good time. But it's all within the environment that Mother Jashoda is able to generate. Otherwise, one of them as an individual couldn't generate that. They don't have that broadness and depth of potency. Does that make sense? So now the Sarup, so Krishna being the supreme, how you say? You know, it means Shaktiman. Therefore, there is naturally going to be, as he is the complete energetic, there's going to be the complete energy. Right? And that complete energy, that's the Sarup Shakti. Does that make sense? Or sometimes called the Chit Shakti. Not of Sat Chit Ananda, just Chit meaning, you know, spiritual. So that Sarup Shakti then is complete. So for every quality of Krishna, then there's the matching aspect of the potency to interact. Does that make sense? So now, if that potency comes in front of Krishna, then you have the complete manifestation of Krishna and his broadness that can actually be. Does that make sense? Right? So that potency, that is Radharani. Does that make sense? So now Radharani constricted by, you know, certain rules or different other things like that, they'll manifest a narrower range. Radha and Krishna can only be together, you know, like that. Then, you know, then it narrows the range, right? Or Radha and Krishna in opulence, it narrows the range, right? But if you put no restrictions on it, that's Braja, Radha, and Krishna. You know what I'm saying? So that is what's being given. So when we say prema, that's just like the bottom line if you're Vaishnava. And then if we say Mahabhav, others are also offering that. But what we're talking about within that range of Mahabhav, that no one else is giving. So that's what makes Lord Chaitanya's presentation unique. Does that make sense? So you understand? So there within the ocean, you're talking about, you know, the very large aspect of it.
In the correlation between tattva and rasa here, we explain this most completely.
Yeah, do one thing. It's like this. I will go off of what you've said, and as much as possible off the aspect and other things of your mood. Sometimes if there's a difference between what you said and what was meant, you know, we try to make it match, right? Now, if due to whatever the circumstances, either due to somehow or another, you haven't expressed exactly what you want, or, you know, due to us, our enthusiasm or false ego or something jumping in and not catching that, if we speak on either a slightly different or a totally different point, then in one sense there's no loss because it's about Krishna, so therefore it's good. But if it has been a different thing, and all that, it's not that therefore you have to feel insecure to present what it is you wanted. Then it's not a matter of, not, well, I meant that because it did deal with part of what you're saying. Now just what's left, deal with that. Don't go back and say, well, this whole thing was there, but you spoke on it, you actually touched on this, but I actually, from this whole thing, I wanted to get over here, but then you should have said that. You know, or if you feel, oh, you spoke on that, and I didn't actually say no. Just a matter of, well, this has all been said, so therefore now there's simply this doubt left, so could you speak that? Then it's progressive, then it moves forward. Otherwise, we have to go back, put your head together, recreate your, you know, identity, and give you confidence in it, and then, you know, then you can move forward. But then, you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, as a method, Arjuna doesn't think, because I'm a great kshatriya, I'm big, I'm emperor of the world, and therefore Krishna says all this philosophy, I didn't understand it, therefore I'm an idiot, therefore, you know, I'm useless. He didn't do that. Or he didn't think, well, you didn't, Krishna, you said something contradictory, so you didn't actually answer my question. He just said, you said this, okay, that makes sense, you said that, but now the two together don't make sense, so it seems like a contradiction. So could he explain that aspect? Okay, so now just say your point.
So, what I'm asking to confirm is that to the extent of the depth of rasa, to that depth is a realization.
To that depth of rasas or that depth of realization?
Is that also?
You could say yes, because it's just like, we take, I remember once we went to some pundits in South, they were, I think, Madhwa line, they were very expert at what's called, I don't even remember what it's called. It's a form of classical music that's applied to mantras, right? It means, in other words, the emphasis is on chanting the mantra, not on presenting the music. So it's just like, they're not taking, like they would do in, let's say, a musical presentation, one, you know, let's say, line, you know, and then saying it over and over again and singing in so many, you know, different ways. But it's a matter of, they're saying the shlokas and just giving, you know, musical quality to it that's appropriate for the mood of the verse, right? So this person was very expert at that. He was the pandit of at least one of the Madhwa mats, you know what I'm saying? Because they have their acharya, but then they have their pandit. So he was the pandit, I think, at one of them, but he was very much closely associated with another. He was very well respected. So he was, you know, within their sampradaya would have been very big, like that. I was thinking, well, how to, if we could get some, you know, specific melodies on Brahma Samhita. So we gave him the thing, you know, in Devanagari, so he could see the thing. He chanted it, but afterwards told us, it says, there's something wrong with these verses. You know, like that. You know, these verses aren't written properly. You know what I'm saying? Because it was beyond the scope of his understanding of Vaishnava philosophy. You know what I'm saying? Of how you would view, you know, the Lord of Vaikuntha and his relationships with the material world and all that. There were things, because one is, there are two. So anything that's close to oneness, they can't, it doesn't make sense to them. So Madhva will say even Ramanuja's philosophy is wrong. It's not actually Vaishnava philosophy, it's actually impersonal. Like that. You know, because if you take that stand, then the impersonalists can't fall back on Ramanuja and then try to establish this. It's just you throw out anything that's one, so they have to deal with Madhva. You know what I'm saying? Not that he has a problem with Ramanujacharya's philosophy. It's just that the impersonalists could escape there and on the basis of authority. So one, it would be a waste of time, and two, it would be an insult to the Acharya to, you know, use his Vaishnava philosophy for establishing impersonalism, right? So therefore you just say, like Buddha would say about the Vedas, they're interpreting it wrong, so it's an insult, so he just says, you know, don't worry about the Vedas. You know, so in the same way as that, Ramanuja says like that, don't worry about Ramanuja. We're talking about two here, you know, we're not talking about one. Right? Does that make sense? So in that same way is that you will then get find these differences, because your realization, understanding how much important it is knowledge for rasa, right? But it's only important to that degree that you can get distracted from your actual position until you get established. Once you're established in it, you know what I'm saying? How much knowledge is necessary? How much does the kid have to think about that? Yeah, yep, this one's my mother. Right? You only need to know that so you know who's who. But once you know that, then it's interaction. Right? It's not important. Like that. You know what I'm saying? So in the same way as the knowledge is important to get you to the platform of being situated in your eternal relationship, once you're there, that kind of knowledge is not important. It's not tattva, it's the refinement in rasa, the sophistication in rasa. What is the difference between and what's rasa and what's rasa bas? Those things. In other words, the last three, you know, sections of Nectar of Devotion. That's what's there for. We use it as tattva to get ourselves, you know, attracted to that and out of the material world. But those who are situated there, it's simply rasa. You know what I'm saying? That's why you could have someone who's not that advanced study all those things and still they're not on that platform. It's still sambandha gyan to them. You know what I'm saying? But to these others, it's abhideya, it's the taste of rasa. You know, they'll get a taste from it because it's connected to Krishna. There's always there. But what they can get from it is so much. You know what I'm saying? Is that the man with jaundice can eat a piece of sugar, and a man who's healthy can eat a piece of sugar, right? So both of them can eat it, but what's the difference what they get from it? One, it'll taste bitter, or it'll taste neutral, or even if it's tasting a touch sweet, but the other one tastes the full sweetness. You know what I'm saying? So it's not just the act of the activity, it's the understanding, really. So in that way, then, that knowledge is important, is useful. But up to a point. So, because what we're trying to get to is a very, very fine point of Vaishnav affection for Krishna. Therefore, we have to have very, very fine points of argument. You know what I'm saying? But it's not that it's technically any different from any other Vaishnav, because you're still dealing with Krishna and the Jiva. You know what I'm saying? So the technicalities, let's say, of Vadiraj or the Madhvas, you know, he's Madhva? No, he's Ramanuja. I don't remember. But,
Madhva.
Yeah, I mean, he's just not, it's so logical and just how he just completely devastates the impersonalist philosophy. So that technicality will not be any different than, let's say, if Jiva Goswami is doing the same thing. The difference is then once you've defeated that, then getting into the Vaishnava elements. So these aspects of one and difference, we will emphasize more. They will have them, but it's not the prominence in their philosophy. But for us it is, because the contradictions. There is, here's God, I'm his servant. Very straightforward. Like that. He has his schedule, we follow his schedule. You know, very simple, very straightforward. You know what I'm saying? But in Braj, then you have Mother Jashoda, you know, telling God he can't go out to, you know, tend the cows. You know, why doesn't he just stay back? You know, one, why does God have to take out cows to make a living anyway? Right? Vaikuntha, he just has to sit there. He's already God, right? He's already, but here it's like God has to go out and make a living. You know what I'm saying? So these contradictions, then the kind of taste you can get there, you won't find in the other places. The others understand the sweetness, but it's always junior to the to the Vaikuntha mood. So therefore, they will be attracted by the sweetness of Krishna's pastimes. Right? All the Vaikuntha Vasis appreciate the Braj pastimes. Right? But they think it's my Lord, this, you know, the Supreme Lord is so great. He also has these sweet pastimes. Besides being, you know, the big God, he also has these very sweet pastimes. So at the end of the day, that invokes from them that awe and reverence towards their Lord, that he's so great, he also does this. You know what I'm saying? So it's the opposite of how we would look at it. We look at it as Braja Krishna, you know, he just goes out to the office and sits at in Vaikuntha. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So those kind of things then are, how to say, are important, you know, depending upon what kind of taste is there. So the Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, it by nature, because it's one and different, right? Because you have Vishishta Dvaita, Vishuddha Dvaita, you know, purified oneness and what is it?
Qualified
oneness, okay? Then you have Madhva, two. And then you have Dvait Advait, one and two. So everything there is dealing with one or two. Right? So now if you deal with both of them together, that means you have the conclusion of all the four sampradayas in your philosophy. So you can deal with anything that any of them say, bring it them to their platform, and then we can keep going to ours. So we have no problem with dealing with anybody else. We can even discuss liberation from the material world with the impersonalists, because it's the same path. Problem is, it's just they stop at a point, we keep going. Right? So it's an illusion to think that's where it ends. Does that make sense? Yes. Just it means it's just like the perception. It's just like we see the difference. But it means like between you and your father, you see the difference, right? But the father sees the oneness. So Krishna sees the oneness. We see the difference. Like that. So as far as the jiva goes, to get out of the material world, situate himself in service to Krishna, the difference is fine. But he's also just going to Vaikuntha. Right? They're interested in Vaikuntha only. They're not trying to get to the God. Is that okay? More detail we'll study later when we get down to the different Vaishnavas like that. Because then there'll be subtle differences between their definition of the nature of the soul. Is that okay? Okay, so we'll end here. So at least we read we got the sutra read today. We got to making progress.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Chaitanya Gaura Premanandini.